Blog Talk Radio.
Yeah, good evening. It's Zoe Steele. And tonight we're going to is repeat last night's show. And
well, you probably haven't heard it because it was broadcast
on
radio at Q103.3 out of Lakeville, Connecticut. It was a pretty good show, I thought.
It was a good show.
We had Larry Dorman on. He's the spokesman for Council for in Hartford. And we read some news. And I wasn't quite sure how much of that show you did tape, Leo.
The first hour.
And taped the first hour.
Yeah, and the second hour we, you know, we only get an hour show or something.
The second hour we have our own regular guests on that are every week we have.
Yeah, I should play them, but I think that's 2 hours.
Right.
That's kind of long. So well, we got an hour's time tonight, so that's what we kind of try to stay in. Yeah, so we covered a lot of news last night. We had a great interview with Larry Dorman. So
yeah,
that'll
a great guy.
And that's what we're going to play for you tonight.
All right.
All right. So we'll see you back after the show's done.
The opinions expressed on this program do not necessarily reflect the views of Q103 Radio, its management, ownership, staff, or its sponsors.
Vitriolic.
Well, you know, just constant swearing or something. Yeah,
bitter.
Yeah.
Yeah, I try to evaluate these things and then show things that are happening. And
you want to do
from
a cognitive level, not strictly from an emotional level.
Yeah, you know, and trying to do that is not as easy as I thought.
It's difficult,
this one was gonna be, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Well, see, I'm more. I don't know, maybe I'm more mellow now, but I don't know.
Been through one editing process.
Yeah, you know, going through something else, and then this book coming out again, and all these things. But the difficulty is trying to assess my level of rage, you know.
You need a rageometer, a thermometer. You need a rageometer.
But the new publisher says, you know, Leo, you're a radical. No question about it, but your stuff is, you know, spot on everything that's been happening over the last 10 years. And, you know, you're really showing, you know,
Well, actually, Leo's book is a book for posterity,
yeah.
But it would sure help him out if you bought it now.
Sure would. Yeah, it would be nice to see.
We don't want to be one of those, you know, people who become famous 20 years after they go to their great reward.
That's a great book for posterity.
Yeah.
Like reading Emerson 150 years after he's dead.
Right.
But, you know, and he's out of none of his heirs or anybody gets any copyright benefits.
And he was
lots of credit, though. But you know,
a lot of credit. Maybe his credits went to the universe, universal credits.
Yes, they did. They came right my way and everybody's way. And,
yeah.
Enlighten the world. And that's what I'm trying to do.
Boy, he's a great author, Emerson.
Yeah.
He even had to publish his own books, you were telling me. I thought that was amazing.
At first he did, yeah. He published,
self-published.
Yeah. And, you know, went around and peddled them around. And, you know, built a name up for himself. And, you know, and smart as a shoot.
So the publishing business was never really easy.
No.
Ever.
No, not even for the great ones.
No.
But the great ones never, you know, a lot of them don't get published in their lifetimes, you know. So it's kind of strange. But, you know, nowadays...
probably a bit easier now.
Well, you can, because you publish yourself. I mean, everybody knows that. You can go to lasteelshow.org, by the way. I've been publishing that since 2004. And all kinds of good stuff on there. And our radio shows on there are, you know, and updates. So you can go to that. But anyway, that's Naked at the Mic, Survival of the Liberal in a Time of Peril. Must push that for the Christmas season. And everybody, Lila's got a very hot article.
And then we'll have a...
Yeah, and we're going to go to our commercial break. And then we'll be right back after that. So why don't you read that one, Lila?
Okay, this is an interesting one from Think Progress. ThinkProgress.org. During the financial reform debate, Representative Spencer Baucus, who is a Republican from Alabama who will become the chairman of the House Financial Service Committee in the 112th Congress, continually criticized the reform effort. He falsely characterized the legislation that ultimately became the Dodd-Frank financial reform law as creating permanent bailout authority, and he staunchly opposed the creation of the new Consumer Financial Protection Bureau. Now he'll be taking the Financial Services Committee gavel. Baucus has telegraphed his intention to weaken some of the bill's most important sections, including derivatives reform and rules meant to prevent banks from making risky trades with federally insured dollars. In an interview with the Birmingham News, Baucus made it clear why he opposed stricter regulations for banks in the wake of a huge financial crisis, largely caused by Wall Street excess and a lack of prudent regulation. In Baucus's estimation, the government's role is not to protect consumers and the wider economy through regulating financial activity, but to simply serve the banks. Baucus, in an interview Wednesday night, said he brings a Main Street perspective to the committee as opposed to Wall Street. In Washington, the view is that the banks are to be regulated. And my view is that Washington and the regulators are there to serve the banks, he said. Well, I guess they must have put thousands of dollars into his campaign. I guess we know who bought him. According to the article, Baucus later tried to clarify that what he meant was regulators should set the perimeters in which banks operated, but not micromanage them. Yeah, a quick shuffle of the feet. As the work room explained, Baucus is far from the only Republican on the Financial Service Committee who feels that consumers and regulators should be subservient to the banks. But really, has a Republican lawmaker laid out so starkly just whose interests he believes Washington is supposed to be protecting? Back in October, Baucus told a crowd of 100 financial service industry lobbyists that banks should really be making campaign contributions to Republicans because Democrats hammered the banks by enacting the Dodd-Frank Financial Regulatory Reform Law. The banks responded by giving more heavily to the Republicans than Democrats in the home stretch in the November election. And it seems that Baucus is now fully prepared to give them what they paid for. Nice guy. Well, you know who he represents.
Yeah, he went from Dud, you know, who was in Countrywide's pockets.
Yeah.
And you went to, you know, now you're going to this clown who's in everybody's pockets.
It's a sad state of affairs, folks.
Yeah.
Do we have a word from our sponsor there?
Yeah, we do. And I'll be right back after this one. Proud to serve you. They keep our streets and parks clean.
They make our schools a great place to learn.
Employees are proud to serve you every second.
This ad is brought to you by the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees. This union is affiliated with the AFL-CIO.
All right, we're back. And let's see.
We thank AFSCME for their support.
We got for those of you tuning in, we got our buddy Larry Dorman, Public Affairs Coordinator for the union on tonight at 8:30. We're going to be joining him at his Christmas party for the AFSCME staff. AFSCME staff,
Council 4.
Yes, and so we'll be going to him at 8:30. Between now and then, I don't know if you've got something hotter than this, but I wanted to read this one. It's funny that these guys are just falling apart, man. Vatican Bank allows clergy to act as fronts for the mafia.
Isn't that something?
Yeah, this by the Independent came out, Associated Press. Yesterday, the Vatican Bank is under new scrutiny in a case involving money laundering allegations that led police to seize 23 million lira in September. The Vatican calls the seizure of assets a misunderstanding and expresses optimism that it will be quickly cleared up. Our fresh court documents show that the prosecutors saw the Vatican Bank deliberately flouted anti-laundering laws with the aim of hiding the ownership, destination, and origin of the capital. And the documents also reveal investigators' suspicions that clergy may have acted as fronts for corrupt businessmen in the mafia. Man. The documents pinpoint two transactions that have not been reported, one in 2009 involving the use of a false name, and another in 2010 in which the Vatican Bank withdrew 650,000 lira from an Italian bank account but ignored bank requests to disclose where the money was headed. The new allegations of financial impropriety could not come at a worse time for the Vatican, already hit by revelations that it sheltered pedophile priests. The corruption probe has given new hope to Holocaust survivors who tried unsuccessfully to sue the United States, alleging that Nazi loot was stored in the Vatican Bank. Yeah. Yet the scandal, why would they sue the United States for that?
I don't know.
Curious. But, you know, especially if the Nazi loot was stored in the Vatican Bank. Yet the scandal is hardly the first for the bank, already distinguished from other banks by the fact that its cash machines are in Latin and priests use a private entrance. In 1986, a Vatican financial advisor died after drinking cyanide-laced coffee in prison. Another, Roberto Calvi, was found dangling from a rope under London's Blackfriars Bridge in 1982, his pockets fluffed with money and stones. And the incident blackened the bank's reputation, raised suspicions of ties with the mafia, and cost the Vatican hundreds of millions of dollars in legal clashes with Italian authorities. And on September 21st, financial police seized assets from a Vatican bank account. Investigators said the Vatican had failed to furnish information on the origin or destination of the funds as required by Italian law. And the bulk of the money, 20 million lira, was destined for the American JP Mortgage Bank branch in Frankfurt, Germany, with the remainder going to Banca del Fucino, an Italian bank. And the prosecutors alleged the Vatican ignored regulations that foreign banks must communicate to Italian financial authorities where their money has come from, and all banks have declined to comment. So the Vatican is laundering money. Amazing, huh?
They come into the news every once in a while with those same allegations.
Yeah, and they're dirty
corrupt bankers and all kinds of things.
Unbelievable.
Okay, iPhone Snitch Network launched. This is by Jason Douglas, Infowars.com. A new iPhone app with the misleading name Patriot App attempts to draw on the power of the Patriot movement, turning smartphone users into a gigantic snitch network. You might think an app with such a patriotic name might have useful functions like a pocket constitution or quotes from our forefathers, but contrary to the services one might expect, this app allows users to report any suspicious behavior directly linking them with the top government agencies. Much like the new DHS program, if you see something, say something, this app is meant to turn the average citizen into a network of spies feeding information back to the federal government. Citizens Concepts, a company formed by insiders from DHS, defines the use of such an app on their homepage. Citizens Concept announces, and this is what it says, Citizens Concept announces the launch of the Patriot app, the world's first iPhone application that empowers citizens to assist government agencies in creating a safer, cleaner, more efficient communities via social networking and mobile technology. This app was founded on the belief that citizens can provide the most sophisticated and broad network of eyes and ears necessary to prevent terrorism, crime, environmental negligence, or other malicious behavior. Certainly simply download, report, including pictures, and submit information to relevant government agencies, employers, or publish incident data to social network tools. And the apps that they have, little pictures, after you pull up this app, national security threat, they have that little picture and you can click on that, suspicious activity, crime report, product safety, environmental safety, government waste, pandemic, employee whistleblower, and most wanted. Unbelievable. Let's see.
Is there any more to that?
An app like this is meant to solidify the climate of fear in which our leaders want us to exist. The threat of terrorism must be palpable in order for the war on terror to be justified and to validate all the extreme measures instituted in its name. That's it.
Yeah.
Oh. See, here's a little picture. I wish I could show it to the folks at home. It has a picture of the screen and all the stuff you can report.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. To me, 911 seems to work fine.
Yeah.
You know, if you really got an issue, take it up with 911.
Well, I mean, if it's that kind of an emergency, you could
call. But this thing is too much. It really is too much. I mean, some schmuck with a little iPhone now can call the NSA, you know, and say, hey, you know.
Oh, the FBI?
This guy is stealing from my garbage pan, you know, my garbage or something. You know, the petty and bullshit. And then they make up all kinds of paranoid delusions.
Mm-hmm.
And, I can imagine they'll be flooded with crap. They won't be able to, you know, can you imagine the crap they're going to get?
I can't.
If I had one of those, I'd just keep sending in all kinds of crazy crap. You know? Yeah, why not? Well, we just had fun. Just keep sending them out to some.
Well, I just don't think a network of spies spying on their neighbors is a good thing. I don't think there's anything humorous about it.
No, you get like 20, 30 reports and send them all out into
cyberspace.
East in cyberspace, bazoo somewhere with a phony address, and they're looking around for it for the rest of their days.
Yeah, and then
the thing is,
Leo, they can trace you right back and find out who you are, and then
I heard it from that guy.
Get arrested. That's a kind of silly thing to do. That's kind of a silly thing to suggest. I think the whole thing is ridiculous. I don't think we should be having these kinds of things.
I agree with you. But if you have to have them, then do it right. You know, screw everybody's mind up out there. The whole thing is followed by logical. You know, people who think logically. They think, oh, okay, well, trouble. Yeah. But Radical doesn't think that way.
All right, what do you have over there?
Oh, here's another one. This is so typical, you know, but the quake hits Haiti, and Haiti wins 2% of all the contracts. Less than 2% of U.S. contracts for rebuilding earthquake hit Haiti are going to Haitian-owned companies, creating just 8,000 local job opportunities, the report says. Only 20 worth $4.3 million. Oh, I see. Okay, only 20 contracts worth $4.3 million of the 1,583 U.S. contracts totaling $267 million in Haiti are going to Haitian-owned companies. And the Associated Press reported on Sunday. In January, a devastating 7.0 earthquake jolted Haiti, killing an estimated 250,000 people and rendering more than 1 million homeless. The audit carried out this fall by the Inspector General of USAID, one of the largest contractors operating in Haiti, showed that 70% of the funds given to the two largest U.S. contractors for reconstruction work in Haiti was spent on equipment and materials. As a result, 8,000 Haitians were being hired daily by June instead of the planned 25,000 a day, according to the Inspector General. In addition to job creation, one of the most important factors in distributing reconstruction funds is to give local companies contracts. While giving jobs to local business in the earthquake-ravaged country can rejuvenate the private sector and provide sustainable employment opportunities for the locals. But you just can't provide manual jobs. You can't just provide manual jobs, somebody here says. You need to contract with companies so that the middle-tier managers and owners of companies have a stake in the legal system and rule of law, and ultimately a stake in the success of their political system and their economy, said the chief executive officer for the Institute of State Effectiveness, Claire Lockhart. And the UN and about 50 other nations, including the U.S., has pledged in March a total of $5.3 billion for Haiti's reconstruction over a two-year period. And you only got 2% of all of that are Haitians.
Is that right for reconstructing their own country?
Yeah. And they're looking at a pledge of $5.3 billion, right? And I bet you Halliburton will be in there.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Oh, I'm sure.
All the piggies there, all the big little piggies will be there. And then we got five more minutes. What do you got? I know you got a hotter article. I've got...
Funding illegal Israeli settlements priceless. This is kind of an interesting article, and this is from URKNet.
Also, just to note, the EU is ready to recognize Palestine.
I saw that.
Good.
Visa, MasterCard, and PayPal all enable donations to be made to U.S.-registered groups funding illegal Israeli settlements in the West Bank in defiance of international law. It appears at least one of the major credit cards also enables donations to an extremist group that has placed bounty on the lives of Palestinians. All three have in the last week ceased enabling donations to WikiLeaks. Neither MasterCard nor Visa have explained the basis for their decision to do so.
PayPal has backed away from its initial claim that the U.S. State Department told PayPal WikiLeaks had broken the law after the claim was discredited. This is the third occasion on which PayPal has suspended payments for WikiLeaks. Israel subsidizes over 100 settlements in the West Bank in defiance of international law. 100-plus are illegal oath posts, even under Israeli law. All benefit from extensive support from the United States, chanted through a range of Jewish and right-wing Christian bodies, all of which have charitable status under U.S. law. The International Crisis Group's report on settlements in July of 2009 identified the important role played by U.S. charities. Israeli newspaper Haaretz has investigated the strong support provided via U.S. charities, and Israeli peace groups have also targeted the generous support provided via private donations from the U.S. and Canada. Credit card transactional systems play a key role in facilitating this support for the illegal settlements. Here are some examples. The Shuva Israel Group, an evangelical Christian group based in Texas, is accused by Israeli group Gush Shalom of channeling money to fund the illegal West Bank settlement of Revava. You can donate to it, says Shuva Israeli website, via MasterCard, Visa, or PayPal. The One Israel Fund, used an example in the International Crisis Group report, boasts of being the largest North American charity whose assets are dedicated solely to the citizens and communities of Yusha. You can donate to the One Israel Fund, according to the website, via MasterCard, Visa, and American Express. The website of another right-wing Christian group, the Christian Friends of Israeli Communities, describes support for settlements like Agamon, which are illegal under international law. Yet you can donate through their website via MasterCard, Visa, and PayPal. One of the highest profile groups is the Hebron Fund, the center of a 2009 row when the New York Mets were criticized for hosting a fundraising dinner for this group. It provides extensive support for the extraordinarily aggressive Hebron settlement, described by One Israeli group as an ongoing war crime, while the fund itself has been linked to praise for an Israeli mass murderer. According to its website, it receives donations via all major credit cards. Worst of all is the extremist SOS Israel group, which has incurred even the wrath of the Israeli Defense Force by rewarding Israeli soldiers who disobey orders to evict settlers from illegal outposts. At this stage, WikiLeaks has breached no international law and no laws of any country, but MasterCard, Visa, and PayPal have all blacklisted it. All three continue to enable the support of settlements that are a breach of international law, in some cases of Israeli laws, and in defiance of U.S. policy on settlements under successive Republican and Democratic administrations. So that's kind of interesting. So I wonder how many... Leo is on the phone right now. Sorry, I didn't catch a signal there. We're about to have Larry Dorman on the air. And he's a public affairs coordinator, as many of our listeners know, from the AFSCME union. He'll be on the phone in just a minute. I was reading some of the information that AFSCME sends out, and they were talking about Glenn Beck targeting unions, especially AFSCME, which is kind of disturbing. I'm going to ask Larry about that and how AFSCME is fighting back. Good evening, Larry. Welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me. It's great to be with you guys. Happy holidays.
And happy holidays to you. Are you at your party, or?
No, I actually left. I didn't want to be have too much noise in the background.
Oh, okay. Well, I hope everybody's enjoying themselves.
Actually, our New Haven having difficulties with Mayor DiStefano, and he was nowhere to be seen, but Governor-elect Malloy and Lieutenant-Governor-elect Wyman and Senator-elect Blumenthal all stopped by, so it was nice.
Oh, that was nice. That's good to see that support.
Is that in New Britain or what?
What's that, Leo?
Was the party in New Britain or where?
No, New Haven.
Oh, New Haven.
Right. It's our large city local. We're having quite a lot of conflict with Mayor DeStefano down here over privatization and
Imagine you guys supported him back in 2004.
It's hard to imagine, yeah.
Isn't that sick? Yeah.
Yeah, you really went way out in a limb and gave him a lot of support, but he's really attacked our union.
Yes, he has. It's unfortunate to see. And look, New Haven has got serious and legitimate financial problems. We recognize that. Our members, time and again, have tried to step forward. We're willing to provide savings to the taxpayers, and it's just an example of another elected official using the economic downturn to bludgeon public services. Very distressing, but we're very resolute, and we'll continue fighting.
Well, it seems to kind of be the speak of the day. We have Glenn Beck also doing the same thing, and he's got TV media. And he and Rush Limbaugh seem to be taking AFSCME on. We're a target for them.
Apparently. For your listeners out there, public employees are not the reason for the economic straits, the difficult economic straits in which we find ourselves. This thing goes back to the Wall Street speculators, the bankers, the mortgage people. It goes back to the Bush administration running up tremendous deficits by fighting two wars and giving tax cuts to the rich. Those are the culprits. It's not the sanitation worker or the person who maintains your park and recreation programs or the school paraprofessional or the state correctional officer. We didn't create this crisis. Somehow we're being scapegoated for it.
Yeah, because our salaries are so public. Elected political people make the public feel that here's something you can control. You can really get back at it, and we're vulnerable.
I agree with you, but I also think there's this really very distressing dynamic at work, which is public employees have decent wages because they have a union. They have decent health care and retirement benefits because they have a union. So rather than figure out a way to bring people up, there's just too many elected officials at the town level, at the state level, obviously, in Congress who want to drag people down rather than figure out ways to make our society work better, to build up our community, our sense of community, and to invest in public services and structures that will make this a better place to live. It's something, again, we're going to keep fighting and keep making our case. But that really does seem to be what's going on. Instead of bringing people up, we want to figure out how do we take things away.
Yeah, level the playing field to nothing.
Yeah.
Minnesota Governor Tim Pawlenty, I looked up that article that you had mentioned in your AFSCME report, and he has aspirations to be president, and he's kind of a scary individual, don't you think?
Absolutely, and I just wonder, and I'm wondering what you and Leo think. I mean, there's part of me that says let these radical right guys run, because I think that they're going to be so polarizing. That maybe that will actually shock, the middle portion of this country into a more alert state.
But my question is, who do we vote for in 2012? I mean, what do we got? We got Obama. That ain't much to be touting about right now.
People feel he's really hurt his base. They feel betrayed, and so a lot of Democrats are not going to support him.
I'll tell you that.
It sounds trite, but 2012.
It's a ways away.
Yeah, and I think by that time, if you have people like Pawlenty or Sarah Palin or somebody who's not quite as noticeable on the radar screen running, again, I think if the Republicans put these polarizing radical right figures up for candidacy, the comparisons and the choices will be stark.
I think Mitt Romney seems to be thinking he's out in front there for some reason. I mean, if you look at him next to Huckabee or next to Palin,
he looks good.
he looks sane.
Right?
He looks like he might be sane. All right, but I remember him in the Republican, the GOP primaries. He looked like a complete nutball, and so did the others. I mean, it was just a sad back in 2007, 2008, those GOP primaries.
Likewise, it's far away.
Absolutely pathetic. Yeah, I mean, you know,
people in motion. Well, I'm not convinced it would be Romney. One name I hear is the former governor of Indiana, Mitch Daniels.
Oh, really?
Who was Bush's budget chief, and he's a big privateer, obviously anti-union. But because he's flying under the radar screen, they may try to go that route with somebody who isn't quite as outwardly polarizing. So, you know, we'll see what the Republicans do, but I don't think anybody's going to deny that there's a rift in the Democratic base.
Well, how do you think things are looking for a kickoff for Malloy in January? Do you know anything about the team that he's gathered together?
He spoke. It was interesting because he was in Wyman, were kind enough to drop by our New Haven locals' Christmas event. And look, he's been pretty consistent in what he says. He's inheriting quite a mess from Rell/Roland, and he's not going to retreat on some of the pledges he made, which are to not leave the cities and towns dying on the vine, which is what Roland and then Rell were doing. He wants to invest in public works and invest in education, and have a responsible budget. So, I think he understands the scope of the job ahead of him.
Mm-hmm.
And I think he understands that sacrifice is something that's got to be shared.
Mm-hmm.
And it has to be broad-based. I don't think he has any illusions about the difficulty of the challenge, but
yeah,
he wants to bring people together, and he wants workers to be part of that dialogue and that process, and that's refreshing. You know, it's still refreshing, even though we all know he's got a heck of a challenge ahead of him.
He sure does.
What do you think? What do you think you might do now that Hayes was convicted and sentenced to death, and Malloy is a pro?
He's anti the death penalty.
Anti-death penalty.
And I like that because I'm anti the death penalty. I know you're not, Leo, but.
Well, not.
I'll be honest with you, Leo. I just don't know that is going to. I mean, maybe Republicans will try to make that an issue.
No, I'm just curious because, in the next 4 years, that issue might come up here again.
Well, absolutely. And he hasn't shifted his position at all.
Whether
the legislature takes action, then he'll have to deal with that as a governor. I take the attitude we represent 5,000 frontline state correctional workers, and I often like the attitude they take, which is, look, we do the job we're told to do, and Malloy is going to do the job he has to do. And in the context of a $3.7 billion deficit, and the need to improve public services, the need to have a fair tax structure to provide property tax relief, I don't see this as a central issue. It's not to say it won't be controversial.
Mm-hmm.
It's not to say Republicans won't try to dredge it up. But I think he's very focused on how are we going to create jobs and put people to work.
Good.
And, that's all. You know, that would be my only point there.
What would AFSCME like to see him do? What would be the most important thing that we would support and try to push, do you think?
That's a good question, Lila. Look, there are a lot of things we feel need to be done to fix this state. There are some very specific policy recommendations that we've made, that we've advocated for. I've talked about them on your show. Thanks to your letting me on the show. But we want to see the healthcare reform, the state-style healthcare reform, go into effect, and that means opening up the state insurance pool to expand affordability and access to healthcare. REL tried her best to stop it, and now the Sustinet legislation passed. So we need healthcare reform, and it's ready to go because of the Sustinet law and because of the pooling bill. So that's important. We want to see the state contracting standards board be fully staffed and funded. It won't require that much of an outlay. That's the board that would essentially be the hurdle or the roadblock or the hedge against all the corrupt privatization that took place under Roland and REL. You know, we're talking about hundreds of millions of dollars that went down the drain during their two administrations.
Wow.
That's money if we had back, we could fund public education. We could provide property tax relief. We could increase aid to cities and towns. So those are two policy objectives right away. We have a whole slew of others. But, you know, that sounds almost narrow, and I don't want to sound parochial. I think the biggest challenge ahead of the incoming governor and the new legislature is to fix our tax system. We're the wealthiest state in the country, and there has to be a means to address what's going on in this state. We need to have a fairer, broader-based system of raising revenues, and that means closing corporate tax loopholes, and it means increasing taxes on the many millionaires who reside in the state. I think you have to start there.
Yeah, he's got quite a challenge ahead, doesn't he? It's not going to be not going to be easy, but tax reform is really important, and I'm sure he'll talk about it. Whether it'll happen, of course, is another thing. That's always difficult.
Right, but you know, you work in a public school system, and you understand this. You know that our over reliance on the property tax.
Oh yeah.
Is choking our communities. It hurts economic development. And then related to that is an issue that Malloy, to his credit, has talked about repeatedly as a candidate, and now that he's the lieutenant governor-elect, and he says it in front of the utility companies. Connecticut is the costliest state in terms of utility costs. That's a big deterrent to business, and it's certainly a burden on homeowners, as you guys know.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
So he's got to get his arms around that, too.
Well, do you know,
he's got a lot ahead of him.
You know, 46 states out of the 50 are insolvent. Did you know that? That was amazing. I read that yesterday.
National problem. And again, you know,
I mean, they're insolvent. 46 out of 50. That's, oh,
right,
sorry.
Which tells you we're in quite a mess.
Yeah, I guess so, huh?
Yeah. You know what scares me? Quite frankly, I don't know how you feel about this or if you've read much about it, but government's got a program that wants to seize all private pensions and 401ks. Have you read about this? They want to take them and turn them into a public fund. All right.
I don't know where that went. That was an idea.
It's still brewing
out there, but we haven't heard much more about it.
And
have you ever heard anything?
It's strange. This country has a retirement crisis, and the fact is, people who have only 401ks, they've generally had to empty those out, so they actually head into retirement with very little or nothing.
Yeah.
So I always try to view any discussion about 401ks as an opportunity to say we've got to figure out a way to provide real retirement security. That means at the national level, shoring up Social Security.
Mm-hmm.
And it means locally figuring out how we can actually provide incentives to small businesses to participate in sort of a pension plan for a defined benefit plan. 401ks are subject to the whims of the stock market, and we've seen how well that went.
Yeah, the Republicans can hardly wait to get their hands on it, too.
Even the corporate pensions, I mean, the company pensions, they're looking at. But Well, we can get away from that, but another question I had for you, and I was wondering kind of how you felt about it. How do you feel about this tax bill? Do you think that went too close, went too far, or not far enough, or do you think they should have taken it? What's your opinion?
Oh, boy. You know, I think that the president really got boxed in, and he got boxed in by a lot of factors, not the least of which was the changeover in the House with the Republicans taking over, with the timing of the unemployment benefits running out, the Republicans taking over. I mean, he used a very interesting analogy that essentially the Republicans were, you know, taking the economy and the American people hostage. So do I like the way this played out? No. Do I think extending tax cuts to the wealthiest Americans is sound public policy? No. But I think it's critically important that the unemployment lifeline be out there. There are other enhancements and benefits to the president's tax package. He's not making those tax cuts permanent, and I think it sets the stage for another debate and hopefully a better outcome. But
who is the liberal base that he's talking about? I mean, who is that they are trying to appease now? Okay, I say appease in the after he made the deal, suddenly he was bombarded with
Lots of criticism.
But where was that? Where was it actually coming from?
Where was the criticism?
Yeah, where's the criticism? Who are these people that get the ear of the attention
the Democratic, particularly, you know, I think the progressive wing of the Democratic caucus in the House was alarmed. I think that there was a guy from New York City, Ackerman, who had a great line that, you know, don't say we didn't get anything, we got screwed.
Well, yeah, that's true. But
and, you know, I think that kind of urban base, I think, obviously labor union members work very hard and have worked hard to support the president. So I think there are real people.
I wondered who has, who on the left actually has the influence to push Obama's buttons, you know what I mean?
I don't know the answer to that question, I'll be honest.
Who are these people? It's not the union's not doing so well. They kind of slap you guys around.
Obviously, he went outside his own party structure to arrive at this deal with Mitch O'Connell, and he certainly caused a degree of alienation in the base. I don't think it's going to be permanent or long lasting.
Well, what I don't understand, what I haven't been able to understand, I consider myself.
And I'm with you, by the way, in not understanding.
Yeah, I don't understand it. The guy had the majority in the House, the majority in the Senate, and he should have been able to nuke this deal, all right, and pass it. Okay, the way they wanted it. But instead he started cutting it up and taking it. You know, it's almost like he was being whipped by the Republican Party. They were just laughing at him because he was such a goofball. I mean, you know, he just laid back and said, this is that. And he gave in to these things that he didn't have to give in to.
And,
all right, which is like, why?
Yeah, and that's the timing issue is that
puzzle.
You're absolutely right. It was sort of this conjunction of losing control of the House of Representatives and unemployment benefit extension running out. I mean, literally, you're talking about something that happened at the same time.
No, I understand that, but what I'm saying is that they could have passed this bill, you know, at any time, okay, with their majorities, all right, and it passed it the way it should have been written, all right.
Okay.
But instead, you know, he's held up, and I think he was pushed by Goldman Sachs and the boys because they didn't want this was the year they got some big bonuses. They didn't want it to get killed, you know.
I have no ability or reason to necessarily disagree with you. I think that the failure to predict this and the failure to be ready for this really played right into the Republicans' hands.
Yeah.
And the only good thing you can say about this is that the extension of the tax cut isn't permanent. And hopefully we can have a better debate with a better outcome another day. But if you're suggesting he got played, hard to disagree with that, Leah.
Yeah, it is. The only thing that concerns me is that we'll have this fight again.
And meanwhile, what disturbs me, and again, I'm not trying to evade the question, but as you guys are aware, you had this commission, this supposedly bipartisan commission, chaired by Erskine Bowles Jr. and Alan Simpson, a radical right-wing senator from Wyoming. And that commission has been advocating cuts in Social Security, et cetera, et cetera. A lot of damage. They're recommending a lot of damage to working families and retirees in the name of reducing the budget deficit. The budget deficit that Obama inherited was driven primarily by two things: the two futile wars in Iraq and Afghanistan, and the Bush tax cuts.
Yeah.
You know, the budget deficit wasn't caused by retirees collecting Social Security. You know, it wasn't caused by public pension systems and public works projects.
But
the
media sure
because of two wars and the Bush tax cuts.
The media, though, sure makes...
talking about that.
Yeah, the media sure makes you feel that it's caused by Social Security and a few retirees. They really do.
Why I'm saying, you know, and it plays out in a very dangerous and destructive way at the local level. It's the school paraprofessional and, you know, the parks and rec administrator and, you know, the tax collector who are responsible for the mess we're in.
Right.
And it's really a tragedy that the truth about what's been going on in this country hasn't emerged.
Can AFSCME get representatives to be invited onto the media to talk more about this?
We certainly try, and you know, that's certainly part of my job here in Connecticut. We have, if your listeners care to do this, we write on our website, we have a national campaign called Stop the Lies. The other night, Glenn Beck actually went after AFSCME. I'm kind of proud of that. And we are asking the media, we're asking the public, and we're asking and demanding Fox News stop spinning the lie. So we'll see where our campaign takes us. But we are going to be much more aggressive about responding to these attacks and also trying to put forward responsible public policy suggestions. But right now we're in this time of scapegoating, of blame, of lies, and we've got to rebut it. So people go to council4.org and click on the Stop the Lies video. They'll get a little more insight into this national campaign we've launched.
Is AFSCME willing to play a little more hardball and to boycott, you know, things, people, and to boycott organizations that support these kinds of lies that are being spread by the media?
Yeah, and it's a big job, as you know, because the media is, nobody knows better than you two, is, you know, the media has been concentrated into the hands of an elite few.
Right.
And the message is very homogeneous and very destructive. And you have these entities like Fox News that pretend to be news gathering organizations, when in fact they're right wing propaganda machines who give lots of money to politicians. So, you know, we're rolling a rock up a very big hill, but we're going to make the effort, and we absolutely have to change the climate of the public debate.
Well, I think also we forget there are more of us than there are of them.
Yep. We just don't have the money.
You know, we have power in numbers, and we are consumers, you know.
We got people, and you said it. That's very well said.
And, you know, we can do something because we're together and because there are a lot of us. But we have to play a little tougher than we've played in the past.
I think so.
You know, because they're not afraid to play tough with us.
I'll tell you something. Now, when you're in a recession, even a small boycott, okay, can affect a business or affect, you know, somebody. And I was thinking of the boycott against Kellogg's. You know, ever since they came out with the Kellogg's boycott, I have not bought and have advocated nobody buy a Kellogg's cornflakes or Kellogg's anything. All right.
Cool.
And I've pretty much stayed to that. Okay, for the last couple of years. that
some kind of economic impact. With
stop it. You know, you stop.
You know, stop spreading the lies about us. We don't mind fighting fair, but they fight unfair. So the only thing, we have numbers, and we're consumers.
And if enough people stop spending the $5 a box for, you know, Kellogg's, Wheaties or something, Kellogg's genetically modified food, then they'll stop because they won't have anybody to buy the damn stuff.
But Fox News, what they're selling is their brand. But if people demanded that, for instance, that Fox News be taken off their cable lineup, and millions of people write concerning that to their regulators, you know, maybe there's power in that, Larry.
I think you guys are on. I've always felt you guys are on to something with that. Because we can't rely on the mainstream media to tell the story.
No, they won't.
Oh, God, no.
And we've got to try and tell it in a different way and with different resources. And one thing union members need to realize is that we do have power in our numbers, and we have power to have greater economic impact than we realize. I just think we have to, kind of creative and, you know, more global thinking than accustomed to doing, not because we're not smart, but because, you know, we're busy trying to fight for our members' lives.
Yeah,
that's right.
And you see that the other problem is back, you know, the media, the mainstream media learned back in the 60s and 70s not to show protests, okay? So what happened, and definitely during the Bush years, they couldn't even show a flag-draped coffin, for crying out loud.
Well, they could have, but they caved in.
Yeah, but what happened is that now, I'm seeing where there's massive rioting around Europe right now. I mean, they're ticked off in every country, and they're protesting, and they're violently protesting.
And you see a little bit of that, but not much.
And that's only peeking in through a couple of the papers, but you're not seeing it on any of the mainstream media in this country. So, basically what they're doing is they're mad about the same thing. They're mad about the banksters. They're mad about their country being their countries being bankrupt, and all of a sudden they're losing
their
pensions.
That's what's frustrating is that people ought to be turning on the banks and the Wall Street speculators and greed heads, but instead they're turning on their own people. They're turning on the sanitation worker and the librarian.
Yeah, exactly, the ones who are helping you. But then you got these clowns who, where was it? Gas went, gas or oil went up to $90 a barrel today. Now, it goes up $90 a barrel, that means your gas goes up to $3.50 a gallon. You know what I mean?
I know.
So it's like, what in the hell are they trying to do? Why can't they put regulation on these important labels?
I mean, Mobil Exxon made more profit last year than it's ever made.
Yeah, I mean, you're not.
It's not a company that's suffering any in the recession.
Yeah, I mean, you're not seeing.
Americans are going to have to do something they're not accustomed to doing, which is, I think, ultimately taking to the streets.
That's what they got to do.
Well, and I think that's what's going to happen. I think because when they feel bad enough, they will.
And you know what they got to do? They got to go down and they got to march on. Instead of being on a Today Show waving your happy little stupid hats, jumping up and down to
Matt Lauer
Justin Bieber. Instead of doing that stupidity, why don't you down there with no war, no this, no that, get hundreds of thousands of people right down there in Rockefeller Center and start throwing eggs at Matt Lauer or something, or the next time Al Roker goes off on some kind of a trip him up, you know.
Wow.
And say, come on, get with it. But I mean, that's all you got to do. You know, surround those, or even these local yokels, the Channel 3s and Channel 8s.
But the answer, though, is that we have the numbers, and there are more of us who are suffering than they who are doing very nicely.
But the problem is that people are going down and they're marching, down Main Street somewhere that nobody's going to care about, you know.
Well,
but if they went right there to the news operations, mm-hmm. hundreds of thousands of them just sat around there and shouted out to what's that strange, you know, a couple of strange guys, you know, they're anchormen or whatever, you know, and just started saying, you know, speak truth, speak truth. I mean, these guys would be crapping in their pants. You know what I mean? There'd be all kinds of problems there, you know, and maybe things would change.
I agree. Yeah, I agree.
I mean, instead of playing around with, you know.
But anyway, I think we're coming to a very important time of the year. Certainly the holidays, and then we'll be into January, where we can hope that we'll be able to mobilize the forces to have more change.
Good. I wish you guys the best for the holidays and a happy year, all that, and we'll keep fighting.
And we look forward to having you back on the show, Larry.
Yeah, thanks for being on tonight.
Dude, thanks, Lila. Thanks, Leo.
Okay, good night.
Good holiday. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
That's Larry Dorman talking to us in New Haven. He was just leaving his a Christmas party down there, and a holiday party, and we're glad he took time to talk with us. Leo, it's the top of the hour.
Yeah, this is WQQ. All right. that's the end of that program. Well, actually, there's more, too, but it's a two-hour show on Tuesday nights. But I want to thank everybody for joining us tonight, and I hope you enjoyed the show. And stay with us tomorrow night when I take a trip to the fourth dimension and try to do something a little different here and stir you up. So tomorrow and Friday we have George Dixon joining us. So stay tuned for the rest of the week, Thursday night and Friday night, right here on Blog Talk at 8 o'clock.